Good morning and welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Thank you so very much for joining us. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Calvin on the board, coming to you live from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can always join us. Give us a call. Shoot us a text at 844-967-2789 or leave a comment on the live stream if you're watching on Facebook, YouTube, and or Twitter. Very excited to have our next guest join us. And I've been practicing this all morning long. J.P. Darabogasian is our guest. How did I do?
Close. Bogosian.
J.P. Darabogasian is our guest. And he has got the podcast called This Queer Book Saved My Life. And your podcast recently won a GLAAD Award.
Not yet. Nominated.
You're nominated. I'm sorry. I'm giving you the crown before it's time. But yes, you've been nominated. That's very exciting. Tell us about that.
It is. So we are based in the Midwest out of Minneapolis. And the premise of our podcast is that, you know, looking at LGBTQ book bans and all of this anti-LGBTQ legislation, we thought we should look into what do these books actually mean, right? We know that book bans are wrong. We know that, you know, the power of literature, quote unquote. But what does it actually look like when a book is so important to a queer person that it literally, in some aspects, saves their life? And guests, you know, they define save differently, right? For some, it's finally finding the language to come out. For some, it's beginning their gender transition. For some, it's processing a, you know, abusive relationship or homophobia in their family. So we talk about them, about what that was like, how they got the book, and then we bring in the book's author. And we have a conversation with the author about what did it take to write this book? What did it take to get it out into the world? Was it easy? Did you experience any pushback? And then how did it change the author? And then what's great for me is I get to sit back, turn my microphone off, and let them talk to each other, which is always pretty magical to watch this, you know, reader of this book talk with the author of the book that saved their life. So we've been going since Pride Month of June of 2022. And we're coming up on our second year anniversary. And then GLAAD happened.
I can't imagine how emotional that must be, JP, to see the person who has read this book and then the author of the book talk about the experience. It must be, I can't even imagine what that's like.
It's what we don't do any like pre-setup either. So literally when we log in, it's they're seeing them for the first time, they're talking, and you can see they get a little shy. And at some points I have to, you know, maybe coax out some, you know, questions from them because sometimes they're like, can I even say anything? And I'm like, yes, they're here.
That's why you're here.
You can talk with them.
I'm curious some of the author's stories and what it took and what they had to go through in order to write their books. And I'm sure that, as you said, the reasoning is probably different for everybody, but what are some of the things that have really stuck out with you since you started?
Yeah, so there's an author, Sarah Schulman, and she wrote a book about homophobia in the family and how it functions. And it took her 10 years just to get a publisher to put it out. Like, she had the manuscript, and she even had queer folks within the industry, like agents that were like, you don't want to publish this. Like, it's not, don't, you know, you're going to get a lot of pushback. And so she finally got it out. They didn't support her in it at all. She had to put together her own book tour, which included like going through Canada, and it caught on, and like the internet found it, queer internet. And by the time she got to Western Canada, sold out readings, sold out events. And so suddenly the publisher realized, you know, after the fact that they had something here, right, that was important that people wanted to talk about. And so they finally got behind the book and publishing it and getting to the audiobook, right? So I think that's one story that's absolutely stuck out in my mind. I think Carmen Maria Machado, her memoir, because she looks back on it and she says that she wishes that she never had to write it. And if she had to go back, she never would write it because it's about processing abuse in this relationship that she had. And there wasn't really any other book like it. You know, she went to do the research and she found there was nothing. So she was literally writing the first one. And so to talk with her about even the point of view to write it in, right? So, you know, point of view meaning, does she write it in I statements? Like, I experienced this, I saw this, I felt that. Does she write it in third person? Like, do I, you know, make it sort of autobiographical fiction? And she settled on the second person point of view, which is you experience this in this moment. This is what you feel, which is a different experience for the reader, right? Because suddenly you're kind of experiencing yourself. You're sitting with it. You're thinking, oh yeah, how would I respond to this? So it was really interesting to hear her talk about that process, talk about how she had to get it out. She had to write this book because she couldn't do the other stuff she needed to do, right? It was kind of blocking her until she got through that. And so that was another story that sticks out in my mind.
If you're just joining us, J.P. Dare Boghossian is our guest. He has the podcast called This Queer Book Saved My Life, essentially inviting on people to talk about the books that they found that really helped them either acknowledge their own sexuality or come out to their families. And you've just been nominated for a GLAAD Award for this podcast. J.P., with all these book bans in many different forms, and I'm assuming that you read these books that your guests and the authors are on to talk about. Are there things in there that you think are inappropriate for, say, middle schoolers? And you can't, again, I don't think you can ban everything just outright, right? It's not all the same. It's not all the same level of explicitness or right?
Yeah. I mean, I think that we don't give kids enough credit, even in middle school, right? They're maybe having these conversations about, you know, their sexuality or their gender identity. And the question is, are they having good conversations or are they having bad conversations? And if we ban the conversations, then they're probably not having helpful conversations that can lead to some pretty either toxic behavior, bullying behavior, etc. So we actually had an episode in December about The Color Purple. And this is a book that has been perennially, you know, parents and school boards are constantly trying to ban this book out of schools. And the guest actually read it for the first time in eighth grade. And a lot of the stuff actually around like sexual orientation and the same-sex relationship in it kind of went over her head. So she was focused on other things that were really meaningful to her. And this book kind of kept coming back to her over her lifetime, which was really also fascinating to see how she kept coming back to this book and how it influenced her and her relationships and her faith tradition, right? How she was relating to God, because the entire book is written as letters to God. And so a lot of that stuff actually kind of went over her head. So I think that, you know, we, on the one hand, we may not give kids enough credit. And on the other hand, some of these things are just
beyond them.
They're not going to get it anyway until they're older.
I think one of the things too is important is, I mean, this is, these parents who are trying to ban the books, to me, says they don't want to have the conversations, the tough, hard conversations with their kids. They don't want to discuss these matters, and for their own reasons, and I'm not going to get into that. And but at the end of the day, it's the parents who should be having the conversations, deciding if a kid brings home a book and they say, all right, I've seen a lot of, you know, we've seen that where parents say, I'll read a few chapters. If it's good, they can read it. If not, they can't. Like, let that decision stay within the home. But to me, it's always been, you want to ban books. Well, that says more about you than anything else. You're not worried about America. You're worried about your own discomfort in discussing the issues within the novel, the biography, or whatever you're reading. So
I think in my experience, there's a couple of things. One, I think the folks that are trying to ban the books think that still, today, in 2024, that sexual orientation and gender identity, to be queer, to be trans, is a choice. And if kids read about it, then they will choose to be trans. They will choose to be gay or lesbian or, you know, pansexual. And that's just, that's false, right? Yeah. I mean, that's borne out. That's a false assumption. I think, though, also, there is a political aspect to this. And if you go back a number of decades on the right, discriminating against queer people is actually a very successful organizing principle on the right. And so you can look at, right now we have the, you know, the book bans and the anti-trans legislation. I remember in 2004, all the anti-gay marriage amendments that they flooded the country with as you know, to get out folks. In 1996, it was the Defense of Marriage Act, right? I mean, you can just kind of go back into these election cycles, and for whatever reason, you know, discriminating against queer folks, trying to oppress us, is a really animating principle. And you can see when you do these, it blows my mind. We look at these exit polls that, you know, trans folks are a number one issue or a top three issue for folks that are voting in these Republican primaries. Yeah. And that blows my mind. I'm like, what is happening here? But there's this cynical viewpoint where they use it to organize folks. They use it for whatever reason. And there was a study, I'm not going to remember who did it, but they were tracking who was trying to do the book bans. It's a very small group of people.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes, very small.
They're doing it. And they're very organized and they're very effective. And so I think now we're starting to see, you know, the case in Iowa where there are two cases fighting back against the law that they just implemented in Iowa, which is actually a very good model. And I hope your listeners are able to look at it because the coalitions that they brought together, teachers' unions, parents, kids, a major publisher, which is also unique, to come together to fight back both at the federal court level and the state level. What's happening in Iowa is actually a really interesting model to look at and how we can fight back against these.
Iowa, of all places.
Right. Iowa, the Supreme Court, one of the first in the nation to legalize gay marriage. So, yeah. You know,
my friends,
really interesting things.
My friends in Wisconsin drove to Iowa and got married in the middle of the night. They're like, we're just going to get married there. And I think, you know, one of the things too that's scary is that within the anti-trans bills that are happening, you know, my friends who are older and gay and lesbian, their non-understanding of the trans issues, trans people, allows them to be co-opted into that anti-trans language, that anti-trans movement, because they don't dislike them, they don't understand it. Then they're like, well, why do they have to do this? Why? And then they see it as, we fought so hard to do this, now look what you're doing to us. And it's so hard to have that conversation because you're trying to tell them what you went through mattered, what you went through is important, but now this is a generation of people speaking out, and it's important that you support them because they need it.
Yeah, I think it's also, I don't want to say generational, like older folks are, or older queer folks in the movement are wrong. I think there were very specific decisions that were made in those, like the boomer generation and early Gen X around organizing that were unfortunate, but they did make progress. But I think also there are legacies, vestiges of that, where they deliberately were excluding folks. And that was unfortunate.
JP, do you have time to stay with us for another segment?
Sure.
Wonderful.
Absolutely.
We will keep this conversation going. JP Derebogosyan is our guest. He is the host of the podcast, This Queer Book Saved My Life. Stay close. You're listening to Matt Nair On Air, coming to you across the Civic Media Radio Network. And welcome to Matt Nair On Air. Shout out if you are listening in Wisconsin Rapids on WFHR or in Hayward, the Buzz of the North, WBZH. Thank you so very much for joining us. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, the Board Lord, Calvin, and we are coming to you live from our studio in downtown Waukesha. We're joined by the host of the podcast called This Queer Book Saved My Life. JP Derebogosyan is our guest, talking about their recent nomination by GLAAD for that podcast. And we're talking about books and book bans and all of those things. And one thing I find so interesting, JP, is that people actually think allowing someone to read a book is going to push them over the gay cliff. Right? You know, I'd never thought about it before.
The gay cliff.
But you know what I'm saying? It's like, I'd never thought about being gay before. It's never crossed my mind until I found this book and it was like, oh my God, I'm jumping off the gay cliff. That's not how it works.
No. No. I think what kids are looking for, I mean, when I say kids, well, I mean, yeah, kids. I mean, if you know, I think what they're looking for is conversations. I think they are looking for representation. You know, I think that they're feeling things, they're understanding, you know, coming into their own, and they do want to talk about this. And, you know, sometimes a book is a safe way for them to do that. You know, I remember when I was growing up, I wouldn't have brought a queer book into my house, like at all. That would have been too dangerous, right? No, not at all. Yeah. And he was even worried about going into the public library, like, who can trace this? Who will see me?
You Who's know,
and that's
know?
Very tragic, you know, and I wish I could say that's not happening today, but it is happening today, right? And so I'm glad that there are kids, though, that can go into their libraries and they can find these books and they can read them. And I think that is important. because typically what happens in a book is there's a lot of research that goes into that. There's a lot of thinking. There's many years that go into the writing of that, and it ends up being very nuanced and very considered. And it's really important to read those, and they can then lead, hopefully, to conversations that don't end up leading to suicidal ideation, mm-hmm. that don't lead to bullying, that don't lead to internalized shame. You know, and shame is a very toxic emotion and what it can do to the body, right? And so I think that having these books, having these conversations is really important.
We had a live stream comment from Tony saying, it's almost like books help broaden your perspective and let you see things through other people's eyes. And then talking about the empathy factor. And I think, you know, something that whether you're young or older and you're queer in the closet, I think you're always looking for community. Who mm-hmm. is like me? Who can I talk to?
Who understands?
I'm reading this book. Is there anyone else reading this book? Can we talk about this book? Because I have questions. I need to reach out because, you know, whether it's I have questions or I'm hurting, we're always looking for community to connect with. And that's one of the things that's great in the queer community is that, when you have questions, they take you in and they're like, let's talk. Let's do this. Let's make you feel good because you have every right to feel good.
JP, Derek Boghossian is our guest. He is the host of the podcast called This Queer Book Saved My Life. I'm assuming, JP, from what you said about your concerns when you were younger about even bringing a queer book into your home, so you did not have the easiest of journeys either.
No, I did not. I did not. Lots of therapy to unpack that particular journey. I think... And part of that was, I'm Armenian American, so my dad's side of the family had also a very strong faith tradition, and then, you know, my mom's side of the family, they are genocide survivors of the Armenian genocide, and so that faith tradition unfortunately also believes that queerness is a choice, and so, you know, when you have a great grandmother who hid under dead bodies in a ditch to survive, and you have a grandparents who lost brothers and sisters, I think for them, there's this added level of, well, how dare you choose to be queer? You know, you need to get married and have more, you know, Armenian kids because look what happened. And
people.
I think that adds a level. Yeah it adds another level of, and I came of age, you know, so I'm dealing with that. I came of age, like hit puberty, right? Late 80s, early 90s, when AIDS and the pandemic was everywhere. And so I just unfortunately came of age at a very difficult time where I was getting a lot of those messages. And thankfully, it's different on a different level now. You know, I don't think that, you know, AIDS holds the same amount of stigma and HIV mm-hmm. hold the same amount of stigma that they did back then when the pandemic was just killing so many people and there were no drugs and there was no treatment, you know. And I think for the Armenian community as well, we're starting to see those stances soften a lot. And that's really encouraging, right, to see. And I know even in my own organizing work and, you know, around queer issues within the community, we start to see folks go, oh, they're having, you can see those light bulbs going on. And that's really important.
Well, and another thing that I think is vitally important is for people to actually meet people who are gay. And mm-hmm. and that's when attitudes change, right? It's so much. Well, we do that as humans in so many different things. It's like until it happens to me directly, or I have a friend, or meet a friend, or a friend of a friend. You know, it doesn't affect me. And then once you have that interaction, it changes.
I just think it's funny though. It's like folks, if you're thinking, if you agree with that, and I agree with that. Guess what? You've already met them. You work with them. They're in your family. They're around you. And never has been a better time to be out and open because there's more levels of comfort and acceptance. So start, you know some, you know queer people, you know gay people, and get to know them.
Well, and it's not books that are making them gay.
Yeah.
Right? It's amazingly, it's not.
There's no gay cliff, people.
There's one thing anybody takes away from this conversation. Please, let it be that.
There's places where you can be gay and love people, but it's not a cliff.
Stay away from the gay cliff. There's no gay cliff. JP, where can people catch your podcast?
Well, you can search for it and listen to it everywhere you stream your podcast. You can listen to it at thisqueerbook.com. Those are the main areas.
And if someone is listening who is still having struggles and still uncertain, what advice could you give them?
It's okay. Come out on your own terms. You'll know when it's right to do that. You'll know when it's right to reach out to folks. You know, there's the Trevor Project that you can go online if you're in that type of space and you want to chat with somebody. And they even do it in such a way where you can chat and then immediately get off, right, in case someone comes in there. But it's okay wherever you're at. You will come out on your own terms. There are people that are there in your community, whether it's at your school, through like a Gay Straight Alliance, through PFLAG, through, you know, outside groups. There are folks that are there. They're ready for you. They're waiting. Come on your terms and when you're ready to do so.
And you're not alone. You're not alone. Listen to it. Check it out. It's called This Queer Book Saved My Life. J.P. Dare Boghossian has been our guest for this half hour on Matt Nair on Air. Thank you so very much, JP. I can't wait to find out. When will you find out if you won the GLAAD nomination?
Well, they do it in two ceremonies. So they do some categories in LA in March and some categories in May in New York. So we don't know where we will be yet. So either in March or in May, we'll find out.
All right. Well, let us know. Let us know.
I will.
Best of luck. Stay close.
Thank you.
News is coming up next when we return. What's a movie everyone else in the world has seen but you? You're listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Good morning. Welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Thank you so very, very much for joining us. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Buck, and the surgeon of sound, Calvin, on the board, coming to you from our studio. Not liking that one.
You didn't believe in it. You didn't believe in it.
Not delivered with enough confidence.
No, not.
And the surgeon of sound, Calvin, on the board.
We have two doctor references.
Do you have a problem with that?
Not a problem at all. I'm just saying, does he have an MD or a PhD in sound?
Well, come up with some kind of degree to give him. That's all.
Look,
fine.
The people want to know. I'm just trying to help the people.
844-967-2789. 844-96.
Party.
If you ever want to call and or text, or you can leave a comment on the live stream. If you're watching on Facebook, YouTube, and or Twitter.
It's a very active live stream.
There's a lot going on with those folks today.
Yeah, they're having a lot of fun.
They are. So I encourage you, if you want to see us in the flesh, it's very exciting. Go to Facebook, YouTube, or Twitter, and you can watch the live stream there. Changing things up just a little bit, and this was all over the place yesterday, and it's really kind of a sad. It's sad and it's not, but 76-year-old Terry John Martin confessed to stealing a pair of ruby slippers that Judy Garland wore in The Wizard of Oz because he wanted to pull off one last score. So he had been in trouble in the past for stealing. I think he got out of prison. He served a 10-year prison sentence and then got out in like 1996.
Yeah.
In 2005, he stole the slippers from the Judy Garland Museum in Grand Rapids, Minnesota, which is where Judy Garland was born. What hooked me on this was he gave in to one last heist because one of his old connections to the mob, Frankie the Chin.
Shut up.
I made that up.
Okay.
But still, an associate.
I was so hoping.
An associate to the
Joey
mob.
Joey the Bathtub.
Frankie the Chin. This guy told him that the ruby slippers were made out of rubies. Oh, geez. And that's why they were insured for $1 million. Now, Terry John Martin had never seen The Wizard of Oz.
He's too busy scoring.
Apparently so.
Getting that
but
cash.
In all this time, he genuinely believed
yeah.
that the ruby slippers were actually made out of rubies.
Yeah.
So in 2005, I think he just broke in through the door. I mean, it was not, it's in this small town in Grand Rapids, Minnesota. and then passed it off to somebody else who then, of course, could not fence them because they weren't made out of rubies.
Isn't this like sequins?
Yeah, they're sequins.
Yeah.
But it got us talking. And so he pled guilty. He confessed to doing it. He's not getting any jail time. He's dying. He has a fatal disease. But that just led us to start talking about famous movies everybody has seen except for you.
Because he has never seen The Wizard of Oz.
I find that amazing.
Now, before we get into the topic, though, I will say, I said at the beginning of the show and before we went on air, this could be a movie.
About him?
A heist movie, one last score, hapless, and then at the end of it, he doesn't go to jail. Buddy, it's fine. You know, we get it.
Is it like the last Ocean's 11?
Yeah, like Ocean's 270.
Ocean's Ruby Slippers?
Yeah, exactly. I'm loving this. You're vibing. What do you think, Dr. Boardlord? Actually, Andrew from Maine calls you Dr. Boardlord, the Surgeon of Sound, Mixed Doctor, MD.
That's quite a title, Kelly.
That's getting a little like Daenerys from Game of Thrones with the list of titles.
Breaker of Chains.
Isn't there's this movie that I never actually saw, but it had like Morgan Freeman and Robert De Niro and something that they like broke out of an old folks home or something for like one last party or something like that.
Is that the bucket list?
Yeah. That's a more serious one. This is more of
that was with Nicholson.
Yeah, this was more of a comedy one.
I haven't seen that either, so I wouldn't feel too badly.
I don't think it was very good.
It was called Last. They made a sequel.
They did. Wow.
Last Vegas and Last Vegas 2.
Never even heard of it.
Yeah, I think I watched like half of it and then fell asleep. I'm like, I hate this.
844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. A movie that everyone else in the world has seen except for you. I have a long list.
Yeah.
Because I'm a baby and I don't like violence.
Oh, well, what do you mean you don't like define violence? Like
Quentin, I have never seen a Quentin Tarantino film.
Okay.
I just know from reading about it and seeing trailers for them that it's going to make me upset.
Yeah. Some of those movies can be violent. Now I will say, we talked about it before. And a Quentin Tarantino movie that I think you will really enjoy is Jackie Brown. It's not very violent at all. There's some gunplay, but it's not.
Is that with Pam Grier?
Yes, with Pam Grier.
Who's an icon.
Yep. Robert De Niro, Sam Jackson, a young Chris Tucker, Bridget Fonda, Michael Keaton's in it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's a great movie. It's a great
action movie. Yeah. Action kind of movie.
Exactly. And so I'd say you'd like that one. I consulted with the AFI's 100 Greatest Movies, and there are a lot of movies I have not seen.
Is the American Film Institute's list.
Correct. Like Jaws.
You never saw Jaws?
It's scary.
Calvin, have you seen Jaws?
I think I've seen most of it. I don't know if I've ever sat through it, like sat down and watched it from start to finish. But I've seen all parts of it at one point.
You better get a bigger boat. I mean, there's some classic lines.
See, I know
in that
the
movie.
Lines. I know the lines.
I can't believe you never saw Jaws.
Never saw Jaws. Scary movie.
You'll watch Quentin Tarantino.
There's a difference between scary and violent.
Okay, fair enough.
Never seen Rocky.
The first Rocky?
Yeah, never seen Rocky. I've never seen
Cuff and Link his turtles.
Okay, sure. Whatever. What that means? I don't know what that means.
Calvin, Rocky.
Nope, never seen it.
You guys.
Oh, you know what? Hey, have you seen Pulp Fiction? Be quiet, all right? Let's see here. How about this one? I'm trying to find one that I know. Platoon. Oh, no, that's got violence. I got a lot of violence. You're not going to watch that. 12 Angry Men. I've seen that, actually. I've seen that. The original 12 Angry Men.
That's a courtroom drama.
Yeah, it's the jury inside the room deciding, and there's one guy who basically convinces everyone that this person is innocent.
I have never seen 12 Angry Men.
It's a beautiful
movie. It's a classic.
Yeah, and the remake with Jack Lemmon and Ving Rhames, super amazing. Ving Rhames won an Emmy for it and made Jack Lemmon get up on stage and give it. He's like, I don't deserve this. Give it to him. And Jack Lemmon's like, this is weird.
Oh,
yeah.
That's sweet.
Have you seen, you haven't seen Pulp Fiction. Have you ever seen Do the Right Thing? Spike Lee's first big movie.
No.
Beautiful film. You'll feel hot watching it because it's
a steamy.
No, it's filmed during a heat wave, and he purposely shot on like with red filters against red walls to make it feel
even warmer.
Yeah, exactly. Annie Hall.
Classic.
Beautiful movie. What we have here is a dead shark.
This is the AFI list of the top 100 movies, and we're talking about what is a classic movie or a really popular movie that everyone else in the world has seen.
Text us.
Except for you. 844-967-2789. 844-96-PARTY.
Party. Lynn texted in. I think you're okay, Lynn. She said, none of the Fast and the Furious. Those are not classics. You're fine. Never watch it. I'll give you the rundown in one sentence. It's about family. There, you've seen it.
Fast and the Furious?
Yeah, it's always what they talk about. It's all about family. Just go about family.
I thought it was all about cars.
Yeah, but it's always about family, though. Sometimes there's cars, and sometimes there's cars in space, and sometimes there's Ludacris, and sometimes there's Ja Rule, but it's always about family. And she's also never seen Jaws.
Well, you're not alone, Lynn. You and Greg Bach.
And the thing is, at this point, I'll watch Jaws. I'm fine. Tony Zimmerman popped up and said, Casablanca.
Oh, Tony, it's such a good movie.
It's a good movie. That's definitely like sit down with some, like literally make popcorn. Make popcorn, get a soda, and
it's just so of that time. Mm-hmm. And very stylistic, and I think I really think you would like it. Another one popping up on the stream, Cool Hand Luke.
Never seen that either.
That's a great
Never
movie.
Never been a huge fan of Westerns. And then
it's not a Western.
Really?
Cool Hand Luke is not a Western.
I'm learning stuff. Hey.
Cool Hand Luke with Paul Newman.
Well, yeah, I think that's the only one.
It's a prison movie.
Oh, okay. I'll see it tonight.
It's kind of like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Oh,
in
yeah.
That there's
Didn't
really,
see that either.
That's another really good movie where there's some very lighthearted moments in it.
Yeah.
But it's very emotional.
Like all these classic movies, I know how they end. I know the big parts. I know the players. I just never have actually seen them. Andrew from Maine said, have you seen Mr. Holland's Opus? I've seen that movie probably more times than any other human because I used to work at a music store.
Oh, gosh.
And they played it on a loop all day for like months. So I've probably seen it
9,000 times.
I've probably seen it upwards of 100 times. Oh my gosh. Unrecognized number, texter, anonymous person. Maybe they want to stay anonymous. From the 608, listen to WMDX. I've never seen Frozen, and I've raised two girls.
How did you escape?
How did you manage that slalom?
That's remarkable. That's remarable.
What are other ones that you've seen that you feel like it makes people go?
That I've never seen?
Yeah.
Again, I saw the first Scream.
Okay.
And then I never went back because it was just too bloody.
Okay. Yeah.
I want to say I saw the very first Halloween.
Me too. I watched that a couple of years ago. How Anyone's Killed by Michael Myers is beyond me. He doesn't run at you. He just kind of saunters.
Is he lumbering?
He's
after
the
you?
Shape who saunters. He's like, hey, if he talked to you, like, here I come. I'm coming to kill you. No. We got another text from the 262. Popular movies I tried to watch, Blade Runner and fell asleep. Okay.
That's a very dark movie.
Die Hard, I guess. I've seen Die Hard. Love that movie. It's a Christmas movie. We won't discuss that.
That's a
that.
Whole different debate.
I have seen all the classics you've mentioned, though. Great Lines and Cool Hand Luke. Is that where we...
That's the egg-eating contest.
Oh, I thought that was the one where he says, what we have here is a failure.
A failure to communicate.
Ah, see, I know things. Have you seen Gone with the Wind?
Oh, too many times.
Never seen that. Never will.
Too many times. Well, and...
Didn't age well, did it?
Well, no, it certainly didn't. Nah. But as far as the costuming goes and the scope of it, it was
I
certainly of its time.
I am
shall
reading
we say.
A book right now that is talking about the history of outrage in our country, and it brought up specifically Gone with the Wind and how the author of the book was very upset about some of the more inflammatory words being taken out. And it's very interesting. So I will never see that movie, and I'm fine with that. And if you like it, whatever. I don't care.
Yeah, you don't have to. That's not one I would say that is a must-see. 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. What's a movie that everyone else in the world has seen except Ooh. For you?
Well, let's see here.
Tony on the live stream says, I have seen none of the Oceans. I have no idea.
Ocean's 11?
Which is a good movie, and I like the one with Sandra Bullock.
Yep, eight.
With the whole female cast.
8, 11, and 13. 12 is garbage.
All right, good to know.
Let's see here. I've seen, this is Tony saying, I've seen Paw Patrol 2, Mite Pups, instant classic to the kids. Yep, okay. And let's see, Some Like It Hot.
Oh, that is a
all-time fan.
That is a great movie.
Watch that for a film class.
And actually, Some Like It Hot, with all of this banning drag stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
That would have been one of the movies that you wouldn't be able to watch anymore because the characters are in drag.
Here's one. Tony Lone Tree also says, my husband has never seen The Sound of Music. Guess what, Tony? Me either. You know why? My mother loves that movie, and I didn't want to watch it because it looked dumb.
It's not dumb.
So at this point, I'm like, I'm good.
You would like that. All right, Gary from Sussex is on the line. Just a couple of minutes left. Gary, thank you so much for calling. What is a movie everyone in the world has seen except for you?
I don't know if I can put it in that category, but I saw The Beekeeper. That's the new
Statham movie?
That movie at all? Yeah.
That just came out. Yeah, it's in the genre of old man is thwarted or wronged and he must kill everyone.
That, I'm telling you, that the synopsis of the movie is great because it's about people who cheat old people. And what he does to these people is incredible. And the drive he had, I highly recommend the movie. It is really, really, really good.
Thank you so very much, Gary. Really always appreciate you calling and really appreciate you
listening.
Thanks, Gary. If you want to chime in on this, 844-967-2789. Stay close. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air, coming to you across the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Dr. Slide on the board, coming to you live from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can always join us at 844-967-2789, 844-96.
Party!
Or leave a comment on the live stream. They got a party going on the live stream today.
Yeah, y'all got to get on the live stream. Don't sleep on the live stream, folks.
If you're watching on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter, you can leave a comment there as well. Talking about, and this all spurred from this gentleman who confessed on Monday to stealing a pair of ruby slippers from this museum in Minnesota because an old mob associate told him that they were made of actual rubies. And of course, they're not.
No.
And he had never seen The Wizard of Oz. And that got us talking about movies that almost everyone else in the world has seen except for you.
Do you think he would have, like, even if he had seen The Wizard of Oz,
he might have still thought that they were actually made out of rubies.
Yeah, the movie was made in 1938. It's not like they were going for, like, high def. Like, you know, you never know. I think I want to see this in a movie. I want to see Seth Rogen play some role. Like, it's like the robber is his father and he's just trying to convince the court, look, hey, this is what happened. He's an old man. This is all he knows. Let him die at my house.
Well, and that's pretty much what's going to happen with this gentleman.
I'm going to write this movie.
Go for it.
And win Oscars.
And I think you should go for George Clooney. I think you shoot high.
Oh boy. Oh, see, I was going to go for older, even like leaving like Robert De Niro, someone in their 70s or 80s, like someone who's like, you know.
Then you better get going on this movie.
Mm-hmm. I'm going. I got half the movie in my head.
Greg is very, very excited about this. Coming to Pfizer Forum, a little music news. Heart is going to be headlining Pfizer Forum August 15th, along with fellow Rock and Roll Hall of Famers Cheap Trick. It is the Royal Flush Tour that was just announced. Anne and Nancy Wilson started playing their first shows together since 2019, late last year. So they haven't been out on the road for a while.
The Wilson sisters are an American treasure. If you want to see something absolutely gorgeous, I've mentioned this before on the show, look up their performance of Stairway to Heaven for the Presidential Medal of Freedom, I believe. It's the award we give artists. Mm-hmm. They perform it for Led Zeppelin. All three surviving members are there. They are performing it.
The Wilson sisters are performing it in front of Led Zeppelin.
In front of Led Zeppelin. And I would go into more detail, but it's almost like a story that unfolds as you watch it. It gets bigger and better. And if you don't have tears in your eyes by the end of it, you are a robot.
Well, Ann Wilson's voice is remarkable. She is remarkable.
She's got to be in her 60s now, her like early to mid 60s, if
late,
not more.
Late 60s, I would say.
She can still belt out those notes. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, she really hits it. Yeah. She really hits it. Two of my first concerts, Papa Rico says, Cheap Trick and
nice.
And Heart.
I've never seen Heart. And I would see
Are Cheap you going to go?
It depends on what day of the week it's on.
Mm. We'll check on that. August 15th.
It's probably a Saturday.
And you'll be working at the Laughing Tap.
Always.
Another big musical artist, the Copacabana, baby. Barry Manilow announcing an 8-city tour across the Midwest over the summer. His final shows in these cities, he's turning 81 in June. So his final stops in these cities, Barry Manilow, the final concerts in Milwaukee at Fiserv on August 3rd, and then in Green Bay, July 29th at the Resch Center. This is Barry Manilow's 16th concert in Milwaukee over 5 decades.
Have you ever seen him?
I haven't. And he's really, I mean, he has been a prolific songwriter, and that's just not my style of music, but I certainly appreciate his showmanship and his incredible longevity. I mean, he and Bette Midler started playing in bathhouses together. Mm-hmm.
Oh, Bette Midler. I love Bette Midler so much. I would love to see her in concert.
She's great.
Oh.
And very, very funny.
Oh my gosh, yes. So bawdy. Still bawdy to this day. Doesn't take... And if you want fun, I think she's still there. She's still on Twitter. Her Twitter account is just...
Bette Midler's?
Yeah, don't mess with her because she doesn't suffer fools and she won't suffer you. So yeah, Bette Midler on the Twitter. You know what else you can find on Twitter? Civic Media.
You can.
That was what we call a segue.
Nice.
You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram.
All the places.
All the places. Threads?
We're on Threads.
Threads!
That we truly are everywhere then.
But you can alleviate all that search and just go to the Civic Media app, download it, listen to our shows streaming-wise, text and call us.
844-967-2789 or leave a comment on our very busy live stream today.
I would call this a party stream.
Watching on Facebook, YouTube, and or Twitter. We have the news coming up in just a little bit, followed by the wonderful Todd Albaugh program, and then Matt Flynn Direct from 2 to 4, followed by Devils from 4 to 6 p.m. Just been covering a couple of different things, talking about movies that you've never seen and you should, and concerts coming to town. Sharky from Racine is on the line. Good morning, Sharky. We just got a couple of minutes left. What did you want to say?
You bet. Here's a film, Danny Bonaducci, Mr. Danny Bonaducci, Partridge Family here.
They let him in a movie?
He did it. It was in a movie, yes. With the Melora Walters, she was the hot babe, and the creator was Mick Wynoff. And this was a 91 film. We worked with it. It was a low budget, but it was interesting with the cast that was there.
Wait, Mick Wynoff from Racine?
Yeah, yes, sir. You
okay, cool.
So did you work on this movie? Did you work on this movie, Sharky?
I was security. I was the weapons handler. I was the officer who made the traffic stop and arrested Danny Bonaducci and company.
Well, now there's a story you could tell your grandkids.
They tell me to shut up.
That's enough, Grandpa. We've heard it before. Thank you, Sharky. Thank you for calling. And we always thank you for listening. Really appreciate it. A couple more comments on the live stream. Barry Manilow, yes. Neil Diamond, yes. I was born in 72, but I've seen all of them. That's from Tony. Well done.
And then Tony, also other Tony with a Y, wants you to know that you can find us on YouTube. Just like all caps, so that means yell it.
Thank you, Tony.
Jane. Hey, Jane. Did you have fun today?
We had a great show.
No. Did you have fun?
I did have fun.
There you go.
We hope you had fun. Thank you so very much for listening and calling and texting. I genuinely hope you find something joyful today and you have the chance to share it. Stay right here. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.